As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of One of These Years. Lions offseason continuing and into the, I guess we'll say, t-shirts and shorts practice season, right? Colton, I don't know what the hell this is. Yep. This is like the...
It's a good description. Yeah.
I like run around season. Everybody sort of gets back. And yeah, this is the time of the NFL calendar that they really don't tell the rookies about, I feel like. Because I think that a lot of them are always like, oh, we got to be there like tomorrow, like right away.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I'm Mick Bumgarner, of course, with Colton Pouncey. Colton, we doing well? Last week was rookie camp. How are we doing here?
Yeah, got to see only one open practice for us, but a lot of dudes were out there, some that weren't. But overall, I think we got a good feel for like the rookie class that they brought in, the guys, whether it was character, whether it was, you know, some one-on-one position coach conversations, and just kind of a feel for their skills. I thought it was kind of a good little showcase for some of the new guys that brought in.
Yeah, let's start with some of that, because actually we wrote about Gibbs, Jahmyr Gibbs, who didn't practice on the day we were out there, although I think he did do stuff earlier in the week, right? I think that's what they'd said. So I guess we'll see how that goes next week or whatever. But it's interesting, yeah, the personalities. And the one guy, there's two guys I think that stood out the most that day, Jack Campbell and Sam Laporta, both the Iowa guys, who to the surprise of no one who's ever watched Iowa football, those two guys look like the most ready to go on the first day of rookie camp. And you mentioned the personality, Colton, and the fit. And like, I couldn't help but notice to myself, like just listening to Laporta and Jack Campbell separately talk. And I was like, man, these guys are just perfect for this. They're perfect for here. Like, I mean, especially Jack Campbell. I was like, this guy's like a robot or something, like a football robot. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, I'll do whatever you want me to do. I do not care. And it just comes across like that in such a way. And Laporta is kind of the same way, but more of like a fun loving type. I don't know. They just, you know what I mean? They felt like great fits. Yeah. It really did on day one.
They're different personalities, but it's so funny seeing like them interact and clash and talk about each other. Right. You have Laporta, who, first of all, I tweeted this the other day. I thought Laporta was the best player in the field. You know, we get into that more later, but he had a great day. And then what caught my attention was his post-practice interviews with us. He's got a great personality, very down to earth, very grounded. Yeah. So I think that probably goes back to his parenting. But when you talk to him, like you ask him about a play, I think there was a special teams drill is what they called it. Mm-hmm. Kind of just one-on-one, a ball carrier defender. And he kind of shook Jack Campbell a little bit, got the best of him. You know, his Iowa team, I think they were roommates at Iowa too, which is funny. And he was asked about at the end of practice and was just like, oh, you know, that's my guy. Like, I was kind of more surprised that I got him. I was like, oh, I got you. And he like pointed back and waved to him after he like ran past him. And so he has this sort of down to earth personality. Like, he seems like a dude that just like enjoys playing football. It's sort of this like childlike energy that he has out there. Whereas Campbell, I think you said he's sort of like this robotic, like born to play football, built to play football, like wired that way.
Which he's is what you want from him. Yeah, that's right.
From your linebacker. Yeah. He's a little bit more like serious in his demeanor. Like he was on the other end of that play. He was asked about that. And he's like, you know, yeah, Sam's a good football player, but, you know, I'm just going to come out and be better every day. You know, I'm just out here learning. I'm out here grinding. And, you know, I'm going to be the best player I can be for the Detroit Lions. I'm going to be that guy, man.
It's the best Jack Campbell impression ever right there.
He's got this like raspy voice, like
yeah, it does. I'll like keep he's working been yelling on it for a the lot pod, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Him and Chet both have that. So
yes. Yeah,
when you hear him talk, like I watched Jack Campbell and Kevin Shepard working closely, and it was like every drill, you could see Shep kind of gravitating towards him because he's the guy out there, right? Yeah, there were only three linebackers, two of them were like undrafted, so a lot of one-on-one attention for Jack Campbell there. And even every time he made a mistake, he usually corrected it right away. Like Shep would tell him, this is exactly what I want you to do. Go out and do it the next time. And by the next time he had it. So a lot of that out there I saw from him. And I think that's like great one-on-one training for him. And that'll continue. You know, he's a rookie. He's going to get that hands-on experience. But in terms of what we saw that first day, I thought that was really cool to see. So those two, yeah, I think those two were kind of the highlights of the day. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see a lot of guys, but I still think you saw enough of like what the Lions saw in these players and why they brought them in.
Yeah, Campbell, especially, I think the stuff that you got to see about how vocal he was defensively on the field. And that is always something. Malcolm did that last year. A lot of these young linebackers who take off to it pretty quickly, you know, you don't have time to worry about how other people are thinking about you or perceiving you. And like, it was interesting that they let us talk to Ray Agnew the day that we went out there for practice, because Ray's an old draft pick himself, you know, an old first rounder who went in there and like had to go in the first day and be like, I don't know any of you guys, but I'm here to take your job because they say I'm better than you, like that kind of stuff. And like, that is such an overlooked part of all of this. And those first days, the guys who show up and look like they're still seniors on their old college teams with how they're directing traffic and pointing it, that's, man, that's where it's at. And that's, you see more of that from this group. And Campbell, I think, was the loudest of the whole thing, but I just couldn't help but think, right? Like, he's going to fit in really well with all of these guys. He's going to fit in really well with everybody they have right now that is a player defensively, because they're all the guys that they like are like that. They all showed up and they just didn't care. They just went to work and were like, you know, we've talked so much about Jerry Jacobs beating people up on the first day, but you know, Malcolm was like day one, this is going to be a player. Of course, Aiden was that way. Sewell was that way on the other side of the ball. And it felt like that with those guys, right? I mean, we'll see in pads and everything has to go. But I was telling somebody there that day that worked for the team, I was like, look, how many years have you come out here in rookie camp or in mini camp and just been like, oh, God, a couple of these guys. Shit, I don't know what. Okay, we'll see. You know, we'll see. There's none of that here. You know, that's not this. It's not, oh, God, we'll see. It's, hey, it looks pretty good. Like, well, you know, like, if all goes according to plan, it should be fine. And that's, to me, that's pretty telling.
Yeah, I mean, obviously those guys are going to be the best players on the field, the ones that are drafted early, but I think it's important to see if they operate with a sort of presence around them.
Yeah.
And I think you saw that time again when we were out there Saturday. Like you mentioned, Campbell's very vocal. He's directing traffic, and they want him that. Like they want him to be that way. Kelvin Shepard was getting on him about like, hey, make sure you talk. Make sure you're communicating with your guys. And he went out and did that. It was natural for him. It wasn't forced. And I think the way that he's going to kind of ingrain himself with the team is sort of similar. Like he said, I think at his rookie press conference that, you know, he doesn't want to come in and just kind of, you know, stir things up. Like it's something you have to earn, something that has to come organically. I think you saw that with Aiden last year. Aiden wasn't trying to be the guy and say, like, I'm here to take over. This is my defensive line.
Very quiet for a long time.
Almost too quiet, I think.
It was and weird
he finally
for
kind
a while.
Of found his footing. Finally found his voice a little bit as the season went on too. So I think you're going to see Jack Campbell kind of operate the same way. And you saw that a little bit out there, but in terms of like the rookies, his fellow players out there, he was definitely vocal. He was kind of leading the way and kind of showing it without, you know, being this sort of over dramatic presence. And I think that was important. And then Laporta on the other side, he kind of just did it with his play. Like he didn't really need to do a lot of talking.
Yeah,
he was the best guy out there. He was catching everything, running every route. They were lining him out wide, you know, in line, like doing it all with him. And I know a lot of people might have been surprised that the Lions took him over Michael Mayer and some of these other tight ends and what was viewed as a stat class. But I think the more you see him, the more it makes sense.
Right. And talk to him too, you know.
Talk to him too. Yeah. I mean, like that's a lot of, if you're not following the Lions, you might be surprised by this, but like they really value character. They say it all the time. Football character is so important to them. And just like the way these guys are off the field. And it may sound like, oh, you can't just win with a team full of high character guys. But when your football drive and your football character matches that off the field, like you're going to get a team of good players that are hungry, that compete, that drive each other to be better. And I think that's important.
Yeah.
And so, especially in a league where everyone's talented, right? Like what's going to be the factor that separates you from the pack? It's like, that might be it. And so with a guy like LaPorta, you see him kind of moving around. You see him like how versatile he is. You see the way he runs, the way he moves, on top of like him being a great locker room presence. Like you can already tell he's going to be one of those dudes that people just gravitate towards.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you see them out there and the more you see them operate and do their thing, it's like, all right, yeah, these picks all make sense to me.
This is the difference. I think we've finally found the difference. This is the difference between what we talked about with TJ Hockenson and a lot of other tight ends and the Lions' preference and how this all works. Like TJ Hockenson's the type of guy, type of player, cares about his catches, cares about how many receptions he's had in a season. And there is nothing wrong with that, right? No. That is totally fine. Like he is a high level competitor who wants to have, you know, he wants to look back on his career as a high catch guy who made a lot of plays and had a lot of yards. And you can look at my numbers and, you know, that's him. That's his personality. Michael Mayer, I would, you know, I mean, I think that might kind of be his thing too. It's like, I'm going to be measured on how much I catch, how many balls I catch, how much, you know, production I have on the field. A lot of these guys look at Travis Kelce and they see what he does for these teams. And that's great. I don't want to say that there's nothing wrong with that or that's like something that should be discouraged. I'm just saying the Lions' preference in that position is a guy that is, it's Sam LaPorta, who doesn't care. Like that guy could catch 40 passes, 20 passes, 60 passes, 100. I don't think he cares. He told a story there. Somebody asked him, do you think you surprise people with how fast you are, you know, on the field? Because, you know, it's like you're faster than we thought you were, Sam, is what somebody was telling him. And he's like, he's like, maybe, you know, probably, I don't know. He's like, I actually had a coach at Iowa or somebody at Iowa one time. He said like his freshman or sophomore year told him straight up to his face, you are like completely unimpressive in every way. And like, you will never be a guy or whatever. And he's like, okay, great. I'm glad you think that. I don't really care. And then he just like went back to work. And
started for 4 years.
Like, he's like, great. I'm sorry you feel that way, I guess. Like, whatever, man. And then he just like kept it moving. And like that right there is why people at Iowa compared him to George Kittle and why they didn't compare TJ to Kittle. It's not physical or anything else. It's the mentality and the mindset. Like LaPorta is going to give you every ounce of his body as a blocker. TJ was never going to do that. And there's nothing wrong with that. And so that's the preference. And I think that we're seeing some of that already from him, just how he carries himself. And you can see the fit, right? I mean, you know now a little bit more why they preferred him, I would say, over a Michael Mayer, who's very talented and a really good football player. Just a different preference, right?
Yeah, I think that's really what it comes down to. Like, we're not trying to say TJ Hockenson is a bad football player. Probably just wasn't the best fit for this coaching staff and what they want out of their tight ends and kind of the demeanor. Because we talk so much on the defensive side of the ball, the demeanor you need to play for Aaron Glenn at cornerback. I do think there's some of that on the offensive side of the ball with these tight ends and like what they look for in personality wise.
Absolutely. It's no coincidence.
It's not a sexy position.
Yeah, no coincidence that the coach played it either, right?
They got so many coaches on staff that have coached that position, right? Yeah. Like the brain power of the tight end staff on the staff is pretty impressive. So it's no coincidence that they sought out a certain type of guy.
Right.
And we were saying the whole time, like, okay, just because they traded Hockenson doesn't mean they don't value this position. They just value other things in the position. And that's why we weren't surprised to see a tight end go 34th as, you know, second round as high as he did. And you know, as we start to learn more about LaPorta, I think we're starting to understand, you know, why he was the guy and why him specifically. And I talked to Scott Docterman this week, our Iowa beat writer. He said some of the same things. Like, there's a lot of Kittle in his personality. Mm-hmm. And that's important for the tight end position when you're looking for like that next guy. Not to say he's going to be this Kittle-level player.
Yeah, right.
But that personality, the demeanor on the football field is very important to what the Lions look for. And I saw a lot of that Saturday at Red Rookie Minicamp. So
you did.
They might have a good one on their hands. We'll see.
It's such a tricky thing, and it's like you never know, right? It's one of those things where you never know until they put the pads on. But I think you're right. I think they might have a great fit on their hands. Because I hate saying that because it's like it downgrades Hockenson. I think Hockenson's gonna be a good NFL player for a long time, as long as he stays healthy.
He's a Pro Bowler. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of
the
most talented pass catching tight ends in football.
You know, people will look back at, you know, where he was drafted and a lot of that is unfair criticism because he was taken so high and it's not his fault that the Lions took him there. But like, he certainly was the best tight end in that class, I think. I don't think that anybody would argue different, but I just think that we're going to talk about Gibbs here in a second, and it's another controversial position. But like, the preference of nuance within the tight end position. There's a lot going on there. A lot of different tight ends. There's a lot of different tight ends, you know? And you're trying to get, I think that your lead tight end needs to be the guy who can do all of it without giving up anything or tipping your hand. And I think that they found that with Laporta. I think guys like Laporta and James Mitchell and Brock Wright, but the two that they drafted here are guys that he could be an H-back. He could line up as a fullback. He could be a U, a Y, F, whatever. He could move all over the place, and no one would be surprised. They'd be like, oh, yep. Okay, you know, I don't know what's coming, right? If TJ's out there and, you know, someone else is out there in a certain situation, it's probably going to be a pass, right? Like, we, you know, those type of things matter for a team that likes to run the ball. So, I think that those two had a great start to their first camp. Okay, Gibbs, we did not see him out there.
We didn't, unfortunately.
That was not a great... like, it was funny. It wasn't funny, but we were walking down there, to practice, and, like, I was talking to somebody. I was like, did you even tweet that Agnew said that Gibbs isn't out here? And they're like, no. I'm not even going to bother, like, listening to the mentions. Like, he said, oh, no, it was, I was talking to Justin, that's what it was. And he goes, no, I just retweeted Ben Raven. He's like, I let him do it, and I just retweeted
yep.
He's like, and I let him Ben's just taking one for the team.
Like, love you, Ben.
Because, yeah, right, love you, Ben. Because the minute Agnew said that, he's like, well, you know, Gibbs isn't going to be out there today. I was like, oh, God. Like, here we go.
You knew it was going to be a thing. Yeah.
Here we go. So
honestly, Gibbs, like, if there was a day before a game, like, he would be out there practicing, right?
That's what it felt like. So we can both report he did not come out in a wheelchair or have a brace on or look like anything was. Brian Branch also sat out, right? So you know, I think somebody said he tweaked something the day before, right? Like, whatever it was.
Yeah, he would did not see. None of them were concerned at all. Like, no. It's rookie minicamp. It was one day that they missed. Like, they'll be out there for OTAs. Like, we'll be fine. No need to overreact right now May of the calendar. So,
yeah, I don't think so either. So, I do want to talk about Gibbs a little bit here. This would be probably a shorter episode, as there's not a whole lot going on this week. Because we did write about him today, and we wrote about specifically sort of the, and this brings up a larger conversation, I suppose, about the whole Lions plan with the backfield. And, you know, how it breaks down essentially is, you know, Montgomery is here to replace Jamal, and Gibbs is here to replace Swift and take that role into overdrive and to turn it into something much more, I think. And I think that that's, you know, I know that, you know, you watched a lot of Gibbs' stuff, not just at Bama, but also at Georgia Tech. Like, I guess I'll start with you there. Like, what surprised you maybe about him that you didn't quite know or realize, you know, on draft day?
Yeah, I don't know if I would call it a surprise, but because I had watched him a little bit at Georgia Tech, because I think Michigan State was recruiting him when he entered the portal, but
they recruited a lot of guys that year, man.
A lot of, like, Jameson Williams. Yeah, so
yeah, they
recruited some of those dudes. Didn't get them.
No,
but
they did not.
I did follow, like, a lot of players from the portal just because you know they were after some of these dudes, and so I did watch some of Gibbs's film at Georgia Tech, and when you kind of watch both of them, you see the full picture, Alabama versus Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. It almost felt like he was more explosive at Georgia Tech. A lot more, like, you know, 70-yard runs and, like, 30-yard touchdowns, which you didn't see a whole lot of Alabama. I think part of that was because, and we discussed this the other day, Bama's offensive line was pretty trash.
Was not a normal Bama line, no.
There's no reason that Bama's offensive line should ever be, like, as mediocre.
In fact, I would argue that it was that bad. It was to a point where people were losing their mind questioning Bryce Young just because, you know, he'd gotten hurt, and, like, people were like, oh, bullshit. Like, but it's like, that just wasn't a good line. It just, you know, I think that the draft proved, like, Ekior didn't get picked, and that shocked me. And I thought he was better than that. But yeah, hey, look, you know, these guys are the pros. Mm-hmm. So yeah, anyway, go ahead.
I would say it helped and it hurt Bryce because. It hurt us because he got injured, and it's like, all right, well, if you have a better offensive line, maybe he's healthy. But it helped him because, like, what's everyone say is Bryce's best trait?
He had to prove
his ability to operate in the pocket and move around and create. And he had to do that, like, every single play, it felt like, at Alabama last year because of that offensive line. So, when you watch Gibbs at Alabama, it seemed like, you know, there were less home runs, but I think it was probably more, like, you can't expect, like, a 70-yard touchdown every time he touched the ball. In the NFL. So I think what you saw at Bama is probably what you're going to see more in the NFL. But I thought at Georgia Tech, like, he was really explosive in that offense back then. And I think he had like 1800 all purpose yards, something like that. And like
right.
seven touchdowns as, you know, his, as a sophomore, I think. And really good player. And like, but one thing that translates both at Georgia Tech and Alabama, his ability to sort of plant his foot and go and without breaking stride, like one cut in the second level, just making a safety miss. And I think that's what stood out to me the most when watching film and thinking about how he kind of fits into the Lions offense. Mm-hmm. There's so many times where the offensive line would create this massive hole and you got one man to beat. There's a safety staring you down. And what do? Like Jamal, a lot of times would just go down because he doesn't have that
elusivity. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Not going to break a ton of tackles. Swift had it a little bit more in him, but you couldn't really rely on him to stay healthy. And sometimes he would kind of take the easy way out.
Yep, so, bounce it outside.
Yeah, and it's like Gibbs is a guy who's going to see it, make a move, and do his thing, and just run by you. And that's consistent in this tape. Like, it's not just a one-time thing. It's not like we'll have to coach him to do that more instead of bouncing outside. Like, no, he already has that in his game. You don't have to teach that. Like, what we saw in Hard Knocks with Deuce Staley and Swift, mm-hmm. you don't have that. That was Swift's like third year in the league. You don't have to worry about it. Like, Gibbs will come in as a rookie knowing what to do on these runs and knowing what to do when he gets in the second level and knowing how to make a guy miss and all that stuff. So I think that's what stood out to me in watching film. And as we were kind of putting the story together, I'm just like, there's so many highlights of him just going, okay, one move, boom, cut, plant your feet, drive, go. And he would do it all the time. Just like, that's going to be there all day in this offense.
The thing that about that's why it's so important that people watch the Georgia Tech stuff is because he had more space there, right? He had more space to operate. And it's just because of the, you know, the line might have even been better and, you know, the competition they were playing and everything else. But like, you know, it, in theory, if you can scheme things up for him and block it right, that's where the big plays come in. That's where it's like, because you're 100% right. Like if you watch him at Bama last year, it's a lot of like stop, start. He's getting hit behind the line or he's getting hit at the line or he's trying to get rid of somebody like the minute they get on him. And in fact, it, similar conversation, I thought, and I think it worked out this way for him in the end. You know, Bryce Young getting hurt like that or the line sucking, we'll say, not getting hurt, but the line being bad helped and hurt him. I think with Gibbs, the same thing could probably be said because when Bryce went down, Gibbs was the only thing they had. And like he was
the only thing
carrying the load. And I think when you go back and people want to compare Swift and Gibbs, of course, because that's fair. When you go back and you look at Georgia's final year of Swift's career, and Swift was the carry numbers are very similar. Did not have a ton of carries. It was pretty light tread. Swift played behind the best offensive line in the country his last year at Georgia. This is not that. Like the thing that Gibbs was playing behind was decidedly not the best in the country. And it was nowhere near what Alabama's used to, which also forced them to do a bunch of different stuff that turned into Bryce Young's survival mode. Meaning we also got to see Jahmyr Gibbs go out and run routes and just be a badass out in space.
Yep.
That unlocks, like we had the one clip in there of him just running the orbit motion on the backside, the whole play going to hell, and Young just saying, okay, whatever, I'm just going to dump it to him, and he still gets a first down. Like, that is so freaking valuable in the NFL. That's St. Brown. That's what he does. That's so valuable. And I think that that is the layer that most people don't see because for whatever reason, it's, you know, his context is difficult to sort of sort because he was at two different places. The line wasn't what you normally think it is when you think of Bama, and you really have to watch the tape to know that. A lot going on. There's a lot of squinting too, you know, like there's a lot that has to go right, but it's not impossible at all to see that this would be, it could be, you know, a big time addition there for him.
Yeah, no doubt. I thought it was kind of cool that Brad Holmes said, I think it was the Texas Alabama game last year that was the first game that kind of tipped him off to Jahmyr Gibbs and said, wow, I got to watch that player a little bit more. Because if you'll recall in that game, it was not an offensive shootout by any stretch of the imagination.
It was a dogfight.
I think it was like 2019 and Alabama had to sneak that one out.
They could not move the ball. Yeah, right.
They couldn't. They really couldn't. Like the receivers were dropping everything. Bryce was under pressure the entire game. Like that game was Bryce and Gibbs. Like that was sort of their offense.
Yep.
And that if you look at the box score, you would think that Gibbs maybe had a bad game because he had like 22 rushing yards and like 9 carries or something like that.
Yeah.
You're like, that's the game that really like caught your eye. But when you watch it, which a lot of us did, what he did as a receiver, he had like 7 catches for maybe like 90 yards and a touchdown.
And they were all possession movers. All over the field. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it wasn't just screen passes. They were, and he's doing the Texas route. He was in motion on the outside. Like, they split him out wide, and he would do these, like, five-yard hitches, and Bryce would sometimes find him. Sometimes he would improvise. I think the touchdown he caught was in the red zone where he was lined up as an outside receiver, and he kind of runs his five-yard hitch. Bryce is under pressure, kind of escapes and is looking around. And that's just natural, instinctive. Like, Gibbs is like, oh, my quarterback's under duress. I'm going to go try to find an open zone for him.
Yep.
As a running back, like, receivers are taught to do that. He's a running back, and that was so natural for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when you think about the ways that this offense can use him, not only is he going to be a dynamic out of the backfield, but they can have two back sets where they have Jahmyr Gibbs out wide and David Montgomery in the backfield, or they can bring him, motion him back to the backfield and just do all these different – you know, he's a chess piece for this offense, and it's really so valuable to have a player like that, especially the fit with him and David Montgomery is going to be a beautiful thing, in my opinion.
I know
some people don't think that the Lions upgraded at running back this year, and I think, you know, it's fair to be skeptical and just say, well, I need to see it first, but I think we're going to see it this year, and I think a lot of people, you know, Gibbs is going to make a lot of people eat their words.
We have data on the
at least
fact
after
that
the draft
that they actually did upgrade their running back backfield. But I mean, it's so true. And, you know, the reason why I like Bijan the most is because he is everything Gibbs is. Plus, he's 200 and whatever pounds, right? 220 pounds, whatever the hell he is.
Not as fast, but
he makes up for another ways. But the reason and the separation that what turns him into that bucket of like elite back is that he runs routes like a receiver. And so does Gibbs. So does Gibbs, like a good receiver, not like a crappy one, right? Like when Goff talks about St. Brown being like quarterback friendly and like running downhill and all that sort of thing, that Gibbs does all that. Like we saw that last year. Like Bryce Young would probably tell you. I mean, you think about the old days of football where it's like the quarterback's best friend was the tight end, the guy who was always just like he'd go find him and figure it out. Never dropped a pass. Always came back. Never had. The ball was never intercepted when it was thrown to him, right? Like, it always something good happened when you threw the ball to him. Like, that's what this guy is. And so you mentioned it, that receivers are taught to do all those other things. Running backs, you hope they learn that. Like, that the Swift came in at the end of an era, and he played at Georgia, so it was a little bit different, where you're taught to be a running back first. You need to be able to run power. You need to be able to run counter and all the stuff that it takes. You need to be able to pass pro, all that. But really what needs to be added and is as important is you need to be able to run a route properly and catch the ball properly and be a wide receiver. You need to be a weapon on offense. And that's going to become more of a thing in the next 5-10 years. And the Lions certainly feel like they've jumped the line on that. I'm sure Atlanta feels the same way. But that's why those guys are different. And I think that my takeaway on that whole thing is like, I wouldn't have hated it if they kept Williams, but I actually love it that they were able to add a player like Gibbs after adding, and this because nobody talks about David Montgomery. You've seen him as much as anybody with the Bears. This guy's really freaking good. Like, he is a very good running back who has gotten a lot done in 4 years for a bad football team. Like, I am very I'm very interested to see what he can do behind a real line. Like, it could be by the end of the year, we're like, who gives who? Like, because this guy, if Montgomery blows up, I mean, he could blow up. Like, am I wrong in saying that? I think David Montgomery behind that line could have a Pro Bowl type year if they feed him the ball.
He could.
The way they fed you.
He could have a career year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, because like we talked about what Gibbs can do in the second level, making guys miss one plant. Montgomery's a different type of back, but he can also
evade tacklers.
Like, he did that. He did that in college at Iowa State. Like, I think he led the country in missed tackles generated his last year there. It's the reason why he was drafted, you know, as this mid-round pick. You know, the Bears saw that. They said, we want this guy that's going to, you know, when their offensive line was a little rough anyway, let's bring this back that can kind of make up for some of those issues we have along the offensive line. He did that for years. Probably a little bit underappreciated in Chicago, but I think when you bring him over to a situation like the one the Lions have, with three Pro Bowlers on their offensive line, really good unit that probably just hasn't gotten a lot of help from their backs. You add him to the mix and say, all right, do your thing. We'll do our thing. You do yours.
Exactly.
He's going to do it. He's going to pick up 4 yards and then he's going to fight for those extra yards, you know, beyond what the offensive line creates for him. He's going to break tackles. He's going to make guys miss. Like, he has all that in his game. We just haven't been able to see it. I don't think he's really been maximized in the NFL yet.
No,
I think
absolutely not.
Lions have a chance to do that. I think that was part of the vision. So it's like, why do you pay David Montgomery $6 million a year for what he's done through 4 years in the league. That's probably understandable, but I think the Lions are doing some projecting here and saying we get this guy here with our offensive line, he's going to be worth that $6 million, and you know, we're going to get some value on that maybe by the end of it. I think that's kind of how they're thinking it. We have to see it, of course, and they have to be right on that for us to kind of continue justifying that. But I do see the vision and what they had in mind. And then you pair him with a back like Gibbs, and all of a sudden you got a really dynamic backfield that can do different things. And that's important for how they play offense, how they run the ball. They are a different team. They're kind of this throwback team that are doing it in modern ways with the run game. Yeah. So if you don't have that elite quarterback, you know, Jared Goff's very good. You surround him with talent. On the outside, they got Jameson and Amon-Ra St. Brown. In the backfield, you got Montgomery and Gibbs. And then they had Laporta. We're not even talking about him. Like, that's a really good offense with playmakers all over the field. And that can kind of make up for not having a Patrick Mahomes type.
And I think that's the greatest point, is that you have to know how they play football when you're evaluating or judging the Lions or whatever. And a lot of people do, and a lot of people don't. But, like, they don't play the game the way that a lot of other teams do. They just don't. And they're pretty unapologetic for it, and they're built for it, frankly. So, when you've got the ability to put both those guys on the field together and mix and match personnel and confuse people, and most important, like when you go back through, and we did this, I did this all the way through. You go back through last year, especially in the early part, when they're struggling and they're losing one possession games and they're in games where they don't even score, like New England or whatever. And you can go back in those games and you can find five or six runs, and I'm probably being generous, where a 5 yard run should have been 25, or a 15 yard run should have been a touchdown. And it wasn't because Swift was hurt and wasn't there, or Jamal isn't going to be the guy that makes that extra cut and isn't going to be the guy that he's going to just take what's there. He's going to take the profit, go down, like you said, and just keep going. That's what he does. And like, they do not have, if you play ball like that, you've got to max it out, like you said. So if you're blocking a 7 yard gap and you're giving your back a chance to get in the middle of the field and make some noise, like, it can't be a 16 yard run. It needs to be like a 70 yard run. Like, that's what needs to happen in the NFL, right? Like, it's not Madden. So I guess that you need more game changing plays, and that's what they're trying to generate. And they're trying to generate it in different ways than a lot of other people do, but still the same.
I was thinking about something the other day, and I think it almost got lost in the shuffle last year because their offense was scoring like 30 points a game, and it didn't really seem like you're probably, you know, nitpicking if you were to bring it up. But someone asked Ben Johnson at some point last year, like, your offense is humming, like, what can you do better? And he's just like, I mean, I would prefer to score in like three plays instead of like 7, 8, 9, all the sequencing I have to do basically to come up with these touchdowns that we're scoring. Like, it could be easier. And when you think about that, it's like, yeah, these holes are there. Like, that 5 yard run should be a 25 yard run. That 14 yard run should be like a 40 yard touchdown run.
Yes.
It's there. It's blocked for you. You're just not going out and doing it because you don't have the personnel, the talent, the skill, whatever. And they have that now. So I think he's going to be a very happy man this season, and probably starting the next week here when OTAs start back up.
Look, that's the greatest point to end this whole on. That's so well said, because we make this game so complicated on this show and everywhere else. Hey, look, the more big plays you have, the less you have to show, and the easier it is. Like, that's just how, that's why the Chiefs are the concept. Chiefs. Right? You know what I mean? Like, that's how it works.
Yeah.
But in any event, you know, I think the Lions, I think we agree with that. The Lions, at least in theory, improved their ability to do that this year. I guess we'll see how it goes. But I think that'll do it for this week. We'll go a short episode. I'll be off next week. We've got some vacation time for both of us coming up here. Colton, we do have some OTA stuff, though, so you'll be out there. I don't know if you'll be on with Chris or not next week, one or the other. We'll come back and wrap up all that after. I don't know. But either way.
For sure. Yeah, we'll figure something out.
We'll figure something out. Lions do have some practices, though, coming up, so be sure to check all that out. Colton and I have the story on Jahmyr Gibbs up on The Athletic today, so be sure to check that out as well. And you know, give our guy James Edwards a comment about, like, hey, we're sorry, man, because this sucks. The Pistons, we will get through this together as a city. I hope.
I didn't know it was a hot take to say if the team with the worst record in basketball,
it was devastating, fifth, Colton.
Your system's broken. I tweeted that, and so many, I hate NBA Twitter, first of all.
I'm very happy for the
NFL.
Yeah.
NBA Twitter's a cesspool, and they're just like, don't be the worst team in the league. I'm just like, yeah, because they can control their best player. Going down 12 games in the year. Anyway, that's my NBA rant over.
Yeah, sorry, we're feeling for you, James. That was a horrible gut punch at the worst possible time, it felt like, but whatever. We'll move on. Yeah. Lions have had worse. In any event, thanks for listening this week. Be sure to subscribe and like the show, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.